This episode of The Incubator is proudly sponsored by Chiesi. Providing innovative neonatology solutions for more than 35 years, Chiesi is committed to supporting the neonatology community and the NICU families you serve. To learn more, visit www.nicuconnections.com/incubator.
Beyond the Beeps is an incubator podcast done in partnership with ICU Baby. ICU Baby is the largest NICU support organization in the Southeast United States and provides comprehensive support to more than 300 NICU beds in the diverse metropolis of Miami. What happens in the NICU beyond the beeps? In this podcast, we pull back the curtain on the journey of NICU families and dive deeper into the NICU experience. Parents share their stories, their words of wisdom, and their hope. I am your host, Leah Giannetti, and I, along with my team of NICU mentors, hold the hands of hundreds of families each year who are living the NICU. I am bringing all of the families who I have met in the NICU with me to host this podcast and have these conversations so you can have a better NICU experience. We are so glad you're here. Welcome to Beyond the Beeps. I'm bringing all of the families who I have met with me in the NICU to host this podcast and have this conversation for you. Today, one of those families joining me is Katia Herminio, who, besides being the mother of a former 24-week preemie who spent just under 4 months or 118 days in the NICU, also just completed her master's in functional medicine and nutritional science, while also bringing another beautiful, healthy baby girl into life. Welcome, Katia.
Thank you. Hi.
I'm so glad to have you here. Katia is also one of our NICU mentors with ICU Baby, and she's the leader of one of our hospitals and leads a team of about six or seven mentors now and has been supporting families in the NICU for 7 years now, Katia, is it? Six?
I think so. Yeah? I think that sounds about right. Six, yes.
Amazing. Well, we're so glad to have you here. Tell me a little bit about what brought you to the NICU.
Well, thank you for having me. Our journey in the NICU was unexpected, like many of the families that we help. At 23 weeks, I had some minor cramps, which I thought was not a big deal at all, and called my doctor just to see what she thought. And she said, well, just go to the hospital and you know, check in and make sure that everything's okay. And I did. And when I got there, they asked me how long I'd been in labor. And I was, what do you mean labor? Because I didn't know I was in labor. So they, you know, we ended up staying in the hospital for 2 days, I believe. And it seemed like they gave me all the medications and everything I needed. And it seemed like everything was under control. And the plan was that I was going to go home and being bed rest, you know, for the rest of the pregnancy. And as I'm preparing to leave and get ready to go home, my water broke. And so, like, you know, within minutes, the baby was out. And he was, yeah, that was at 24 weeks.
Wow.
So, yeah, very unexpected. Yeah.
Yeah. And if I recall, you weren't even in your home country, never mind home state, when this happened, right?
No. I'd come for my sister's wedding, so I was here temporarily. I thought I was going to be here for a couple weeks before to spend with my family, and I was going to stay a couple more weeks and then go home. And yeah, that ended. I missed the wedding. It just all happened the day before the wedding. So,
oh my goodness. Do you remember the first time that you saw Kyrie in the NICU?
I do. It was a shock. My dad, because my whole family was here at the time for the wedding. So my dad was here, and he was there in the labor and everything. And so he was I think because he was so shocked, he was trying to avoid, you know, as much as he could, me going to see the baby. But finally, when I went, I was shocked because he was so, so tiny. And his skin was like translucent. And, you know, it was just so, I wanted to touch him, but I was scared. I didn't want to touch him. And yeah, it was a big shock. I'd never seen a baby that small ever.
Yeah.
So it was really shocking.
Wow.
And even at the hospital at the time, I don't remember, even walking down the hall, I don't remember seeing babies as small as him at the time. So, yeah, it was quite shocking.
Yeah, I imagine those moments are hard to remember. So the fact that you can recall that is pretty powerful. Tell me a little bit about the time that he spent there. What was his course like? We know there's ups and downs, but what was sort of the daily life for you all?
He had, you know, the typical, what the doctors told us, we had those first few days with the honeymoon phase where, you know, we were like, this is scary, but, you know, looks like everything's going to be okay. He was doing great. You know, all the vitals were great. Everything was wonderful. And then I think it was like on day two was when we had our first setback. He had a brain bleed and we didn't know how bad it was and all that stuff. And then from then onwards, it was like the roller coaster. It was like, you know, one day was good. Then we had a setback. One day was good, you know, on and off. We were trying to get to the point where he was big enough that he could have a PDA ligation because the doctors thought that that was something that would help him. They had tried the medication. It hadn't worked. But he was so tiny that they were just, you know, waiting. But after that, then we saw him get better. And then we were like, okay, finally, we're in a better phase. Things are looking up. Then he started having issues with his gut. And then that was another up and down. And it was basically like that until like right before we left. That's when he started getting better. And then it was just a matter of like gaining weight and gaining weight and gaining weight. But it was, yeah, we had those ups and downs and ups and downs.
Wow. So I hear there's like times for you that were marked by procedures or surgeries and interventions that they had to do with him. The first one you talked about was the PDA ligation. What were you told about what these three letters and this other Latin word means when you were presented with it? What were you told about it?
I think the doctor explained it well. I had a background in biology and in pre-med, so I knew the physiology and what was going to happen and all of that, but the first thing I heard was like surgery, that, you know, at the heart. That's what I was thinking, heart surgery, this little here. And then they're like, we're going to do it in the room. And I was like, this is, you know, this is the worst case scenario. And especially because it was like, we had been trying with the medication and it's like, it's not working. So that, I think of all the procedures, that was the one that I was most scared for. But really it was, they did it in the room. It wasn't like a special thing. It was quick. In and out. He recovered really, really well, and he got a lot better after the procedure. So I remember being very, very scared for that one, but it ended up being, I think, one of the ones that, you know, was best for him. I wish we had been able to have done it earlier, actually, but yeah, but that one's very scary, and I see a lot of families in the NICU having that same response of like, no, we don't want to do it, and being scared.
Yeah, under, like you said, it's heart surgery. And as adults, we think about, we're going to crack open your chest and now we're going to go in and you're on monitors. And so knowing for you, it sounds like what was really helpful was knowing what was going to go into it, like more explanation, saying this is what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. And of course, knowing the benefits, right? It helped Kyrie turn around and be able to oxygenate better, right? Get more oxygen to his whole body. And did he have any other, I think that was the first one you said, but are there any other procedures or surgeries that he went through?
Then he had procedures to his eyes. So first he had the injections for ROP, sorry. And
that's retinopathy of prematurity. Okay.
So he started off, we had the injections, and to, because he had a state, I can't remember what stage it was in. I think he was stage three. And so we started with the injections, and the procedure went well. Everything was fine, but it really didn't help. So then he had to do the laser surgery after that. And again, that was, you know, tough to hear, like surgery, the eyes. And but again, he recovered really well from both those surgeries. And luckily till today, he hasn't had any issues from that. But that's another procedure that is scary, you know.
A lot of parents we see, there's a discussion about whether you stick around for the retinopathy of prematurity or the ROP exam, right? Mm-hmm. Like, should you stay and watch that? Parents who like to support their baby, how did you handle that, making that decision?
I just, you know, from the beginning, I decided to be there. That's definitely a tough one to go through. And I remember after leaving the NICU, and I took one of my parents, and my mom just left. She's like, oh, I can't be here. She couldn't do that. So it's hard. It's tough to see. But again, it's like after so much that he's gone through, you know, this was just part of his journey. And again, the doctors and nurses, everybody's explains everything before, after, and then it just kind of becomes part of the routine, you know.
Was there something that was said to you that was more beneficial? Like if you were to say, you know, to a neonatologist or a bedside nurse, something that was helpful for you to have heard about that procedure particularly?
No, not necessarily. I think speaking to other parents was definitely something more comforting. I remember especially after we left the NICU, speaking to other parents in the waiting room that were having the same procedures and talking about, you know, what we went through, that was always comforting.
Yeah, helps normalize it. It feels very, very extreme until you realize it's something that happens all the time.
Yeah.
I imagine being 24 weeks, very frequently babies have lots and lots of lines, right? Lots of tubes and lines and monitors, and they're tiny, and their veins and arteries are tiny. Yeah. Did Kyrie ever require like a central line besides the one that is in his belly button?
Yes, he did. He did. So he had the one in the belly button until it eventually fell off, and then he needed a PICC line. So he had that procedure, and again, the nurses and the doctors explained everything and all the risks involved. And you know, I think at that point when you're already gone through so many different things, it becomes, you know, but it's always more comforting to have doctors and nurses explain exactly what's going to happen, explain the risks and all that stuff. And he, again, didn't have any complications. It was an easy procedure.
I know from... you and I have talked about this at times too, is, you know, having this central line, it feels very scary because it's going right into, you know, helping to go bypass all of the arteries and vessels that are outside of the baby directly into their internal system, right? And would they ever share with you like the benefits of that? Why would this be a good idea to do? Like, that's something that I think is really challenging for families to understand, is you think, oh, just put it in their fingers, put it in their arm. What was told to you that would help you to feel more confident with that decision?
I can't remember, but I remember one of the things they had said was that at the time, they kept testing his blood every so often. I don't know how many times. So they had to, you know, prick his feet and his fingers and everything else. And they're like, you know, this, we're going to use, everything's going to be this one line. We're not going to have to do this thing for him constantly all the time. And so I was like, yeah, I think that's the way to go. It's going to be less bothersome for him. And yeah, I think that's all I can remember.
Yeah, I think that makes sense, right? You know, he's, instead of having to poke him and prod him every day.
Yeah.
I mean, even heel sticks are a lot. Yeah, right? I mean, a baby, and he's there for, it was 4 months, which is actually quite quick for a 24-weeker sometimes. They're there even longer. Often too. So getting stuck every day sounds really rough. So that makes sense to me too, right? To hear that that will help reduce the amount of times you have to bother him and irritate him. Wow. And do you remember the first time you got to hold him?
I do. It was close to Mother's Day, I think. It was like some big event. And so I was waiting and waiting and waiting. And then the nurses finally said, okay, no, we spoke to the doctors. We can do it. He still had all the cables and he was connected to everything. And they were like, no, we're going to make it work. Don't worry. So I think it took like 3 nurses to help, to adjust him and be able to put him on me, because they had to put the cables around and this and that. But they were so sweet. They managed, and I think I held him for like hours for the first time. He tolerated. He was calm the whole time. So it was wonderful.
Oh my goodness. And at that point, right? So babies who are in the NICU, they have to breathe in lots of different ways. What was he using to help him breathe? And then do you remember?
I think he was still on the ventilator, because I see the picture, he still had. And that was one of the things. So then they had to like tape him onto me. So we wouldn't move. Yeah. So they were very, very sweet to do that. I know it was, it was risky considering he was still on all the monitors and everything, but it was wonderful.
People who were there helping you said it was like a bedside nurse, maybe a respiratory therapist, maybe?
Yes. Yes.
Wow. Moving all of his tiny little body plus the extra everything over to you.
The extra, yeah. Yeah. And it taped him on me and like, was like, okay, don't move.
Wow. Do you remember how you felt?
And I felt it was very emotional, because that's what you dream of being able to pick up your baby for the first time. And it had been, I think it had been weeks since I was able to, I would put my finger in the isolette and help change diapers and things like that. But it hadn't never really touched him. So that was really, it's like, the first, at least in your mind, the first thing of being a mom, like being able to hold your baby.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was going to ask you, is when becoming a parent is such a wild experience, period. But now adding a sudden, unexpected, premature birth, you have a little guy working real hard, so tiny. Was there a moment, you said maybe this was the moment where you felt like, this is it, I'm his mama, and this is my baby?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think in the back of my mind until then, I was like, we didn't know if he was going to make it or not. But it was like, after that moment, it's like, he's made it this far. And I actually got to hold him, and it felt like real, Before it was like, we were still in that phase where it was like, anything could happen. And I think from then onwards, it was like, I think he's going to make it. At least that was what I was hoping.
Wow. And that hope is something that I know for us with ICBB, you and I do all the time, is we want to uphold hope. How do you describe hope when you're in the NICU? How would you describe it?
I'm not a particularly religious person, but I think this experience definitely made me believe that there's something definitely, beyond like a higher power, because it felt like from the beginning that the odds were against us. First, it was like, is he going to make it? And then he did. And then it's like, okay, is he going to survive this and this and that? And it's like the whole time was like, testing. And I remember one time one of the doctors said, we've done everything, now it's up to God. I was like, if you hear a doctor saying that, then all you can do is hope. And so that's what we did every day. First it was like hope that he survives, and it's like hope that he gets better, hope that he starts eating, and that's all that held us together the whole time. But it was like little things every day.
Wow. Such powerful times. I'm so grateful that you're sharing all these experiences. You said there were some things that you would do to help you when you were faced with these just unparalleled odds, right? Like, this is not something we expect to face as parents or humans. Was there anything that made a difference for you or helped you like get up the next day, go in the next day, even though they said, I don't know?
I think it was him. It was him just wanting to be there for him, to know that he was loved, to know that we were there for him. So yeah, that's what kept me going with him.
That's incredible love. You talked a bit about some setbacks, and we know setbacks happen in the NICU, right? We always say they take baby steps forward and they take baby steps backward, and that's just their pace. I always like to introduce it to families as, you know, babies don't wear watches. They don't have date books. They are going to follow their schedule. And when they need more help, they need more help. When they need less, they need less. Can you share maybe a setback you might have had with Kyrie and how you sort of rallied yourself around?
The biggest setback was the brain bleed. He had a significant brain bleed. I think it was right in the beginning, day two or so. But, you know, in terms of how he was doing in the NICU, we couldn't really tell how that had affected him. Then the biggest other setback we had was with just his gut. Anytime he'd start eating, he couldn't tolerate it. And he would, it looked like he was having an infection. He would have swelling and all these kind of things. And they would do all the protocol and put him on antibiotic and things like that and wait a couple of days until he got better and try it again. And he would maybe be okay for 1 or 2 days. And then that would happen again. And this kept happening to the point that the doctor started considering transferring him to Nicholas because they're like, you know, we've tried everything, nothing's working. And then it was just one day he started tolerating and he started feeding and he started eating and just like that. But that phase was difficult because you would see that when he started eating, he was doing, you know, looked like he was doing better. And it was like we were all holding our breaths and then all of a sudden it would change. And then it was that whole thing of not being able to eat again. And he would be 2-3 days without eating and he wasn't growing. And so that whole phase like snowballed into him having, being so small and having failure to thrive and all those other things. So,
wow.
It's just, yeah.
What were you planning or able to pump breast milk, or was he on formula, or was that part of the process too?
I was planning on breast milk. So initially that was the plan and that's what I was doing, especially because he was having so many issues. He wasn't really eating that much. He would have 1 or 2 days and then stop. So I actually had a freezer at home and I was saving everything. We had an incident and someone unplugged the freezer. So I lost all my
milk
all those months. Almost at the same time is when he started getting better. And then at that point, the doctor said, you know, we still had some milk at the hospital. They said, I mean, we have so little. Let's try formula and let's try to fortify it and see if that'll help because he needs to gain the weight. And so that's what we did. And at that point, he started tolerating it. So,
oh my goodness. Wow. Let's just back up because this is a big deal. All those of you who are listening and pumping milk, you had a freezer full of milk.
Yeah.
And it became unplugged. That, you know, that's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Because it's hours and hours and hours of time. And that's the thing we're told often in the NICU is.
Yeah, that's all you can do. That's what I felt like. You know, he's there working hard in the hospital. All I can do at home is do this and pump. Wake up every 3 hours and go and pump. And that was like my job. And it was like, gone.
You're a very peaceful person. I would have lost it. Like it makes me teary-eyed for you then. So yeah.
What's tough?
Did you cry?
I did. That day was difficult. That day was difficult. But then it was like, okay, well, at least the timing was good that it was okay, well, at this time, we have this chance of trying to fortify it. And, you know, in the end, that's what he needed. So Yeah, but it was a tough day.
So positive, Katya.
Yeah.
Where do you draw that positivity, that resilience, that strength to say, okay, I see you setback. I see you challenge. I see you. How do you face that with this mindset? What helps you?
Honestly, I think this whole situation, being in the NICU, kind of it changed me in those ways. You have to take it a day at a time, day by day, hour by hour type of thing. And I think from then on, that kind of changed the way I look at everything, I think. So if there's any positives, it's just, I think that would be one of them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. And how old is Kyrie now?
He is 8 now, almost 9.
Oh,
yeah. And he's in third grade.
Oh, my goodness.
He's doing great.
That's extraordinary. And he is an extraordinary little boy.
Yes, he is so sweet and so patient, and he's such a loving human being. He's very smart, and he's very calm, and yeah, he's just very lucky.
Yeah, he's definitely lived a long life in his little young years.
Yes, yes.
Wow. Okay, so if you were... And thankfully for all the families that we support, they get to hear you directly. But hopefully we're reaching more folks. If you were to share some words of wisdom, something that you wish maybe you had known, or that had been shared to you when you were going through this, what would those be?
I think I always tell my parents I relied a lot on the nurses, especially. They helped me a lot because, they filled in that gap between what the doctors were saying and like what me as a mom, like what I felt, and them caring for my child. So they, at the time at the hospital, there weren't any cameras when we were there. So they would call me if something happened, or like they'd call me early in the morning and say, you know, he had a great morning, take your time, or, you know, come earlier, he's not having a great morning, or things like that. So relying on them was really a big thing for me. So I would say to reach out to the nurses, the doctors, of course. And then I think just to have faith. You know, sometimes even in the darkest times, things don't look good. Unfortunately, it is part of the process, and you're going to have those things, and just all you can do is take it a day at a time and have faith.
Thank you so much, Katya.
Thank you.
It's just so wonderful to spend time with you and to hear of your story and a little more background about everything you went through, which was a lot. And if you're out there sitting at your baby's bedside today in the NICU, or on your way driving in, or on your way driving home, or sitting by the camera watching your baby, or up late in the middle of the night, because we know we do all of that as parents, Katya and I want you to know that you are not alone, and you've got this, and we look forward to sitting with you next time. A NICU parent pearl. Something we know for sure. Every baby and every NICU journey is different. The story you heard today is this family's story. We hope what you learn here will empower you to ask questions and engage with your baby's healthcare team throughout your NICU journey and beyond. As a reminder, this podcast is intended to be purely for entertainment and informational purposes and should not be construed as medical advice. If you have any medical concerns for yourself or your baby, please talk to a medical professional. You all deserve to feel well. Thank you for listening to Beyond the Beeps. If you liked this episode, please leave us a review on Apple Podcast or the Apple Podcast website. You can find other episodes of this show and other incubator shows wherever you prefer to listen to podcasts. We would love to hear from you, so feel free to send us questions, comments, or suggestions to our email address, director@icubaby.org. You can also message the show on Instagram, Twitter, or through our website at icubaby.org. Thank you.